Somebody who's new to the occupational health community and CST and CSTE is Melissa Bannock. Melissa is currently serves as the Occupational Health and Safety Program Manager at the Florida Department of Health in Tallahassee, Florida. She has been with the department for almost 2 years, and prior to her current role, she worked as a research assistant at Florida State University. Well, welcome to the community, and anxious to hear what you have to say.
Thank you, Marie. I'm very excited to be here. This is my first CSTE, so I'm really excited to meet all of you, so thank you for having me. As we all know, occupational illnesses and injuries are very expensive. It's estimated that U.S. employers pay out almost $1 billion each week in workers' compensation costs. In Florida alone, we pay out over $3 billion per year. So it's very, very important that we track these occupational health occupational illnesses and injuries. So that brings me to reporting. So it's very well known that most injuries and illnesses are underreported, and that's for a variety of reasons, including some employers, in fact, they discourage their employees from reporting, and it's estimated between 33% and 69% of work-related injuries are even they're never even reported. So what we did, we wanted to look at BRFSS data. Florida is not a SOI participating state, so we really don't have a great way to really figure out how many people are getting injured each year. So we wanted to look at BRFSS as a way to kind of supplement what we do know. And so we looked at the BRFSS data, and in 2013, we added two questions to the survey. One question was, during the past 12 months, were you injured seriously enough on your job that you got medical advice or treatment? And then the follow-up question to that was, if yes, who paid for it? So we looked at a variety of variables, and since this was the first time this was added to Florida's BRFSS, we really weren't sure what we were going to find. Our hypothesis was kind of very general. We just wanted to see if the people who were getting hurt, are they different than the people who are not getting hurt? And these are the variables we looked at, just the general age, sex, race, income, but a few that I thought were really interesting that I wanted to look at were their insurance status, whether they had a personal physician or not, and then if they were obese or overweight. So this is before my time, but for some reason in 2013, these questions were only added to one quarter of the survey. So our sample size is pretty low compared to what we normally get each year for BRFSS. So we had about 11,000 survey respondents who were asked the occupational questions, were you hurt on your job? And approximately a little less than 500 said they were, which is about 4.7%. And that equates to about a rate of 4,300 per 100,000 employees, and which that we found that the reported rate is about 3,400. So it's about 28% higher than what we found people who employer reporting, which going back to the first slide, it said about 33 to 69% of injuries are underreported, so that would make sense. So in the variables that we looked at, most of them were not significant. We didn't find significant differences between them, but there were four that we did find statistically significant. So male gender, and we've heard from people in many different presentations about males being, you know, at higher risk, and it's not necessarily because men make poor decisions, but it's they usually work. Well, that's debatable. Yeah, they work in industries and occupations that are typically more prone, where they could possibly get more hurt. Same thing with education. People who are less educated are typically in those occupations and industries where they're more likely to be hurt. So if you look here, so about 68% of the people who reported that, yes, they were injured in the last year on their job were male, compared to 51% who said no. And in 2013, our overall workforce was 53% male in Florida. And similar, 36% of people who reported a high school graduate or less reported injuries, compared to 28% who said no. And the Florida, the total Florida workforce in 2013 is about 30%. And again, so the overall population in Florida that is overweight or obese, the overall working population in Florida that is overweight or obese is about 62% versus three quarters who said they were injured. And then I found this one to be the last significant indicator to be pretty interesting. So those who have a personal physician were more likely to report an injury than those who did not have a personal physician. And so going into some odds ratios, so again, males were almost two times more likely to report a work-related injury than females. And the respondents with a high school GED or less were twice as likely to report a work-related injury, and we used college graduates as a reference for that. And those who are overweight and obese were 67% more likely to report a work-related injury compared to those we used normal weight as our reference variable. And interestingly, I did some research behind this because I wanted to kind of know why that was the case. And I found several studies done on this. Most of them did not have, that at least that I could find, most of them did not have statistically significant findings. But the ones who did, they thought that the reason why this could be that overweight and obese individuals could be getting more hurt is due to the influence of chronic diseases, fatigue, ergonomics, and also just physical limitations. So this is something that I personally would like to look more into, but because our sample size is kind of small for this, I think it's something that we need to look at other ways. And again, so the indicator or the finding that we found was most significant actually was the personal physician, and it makes sense to me. So if you're injured on your job and you have access to care, if you have a personal physician, you're more likely to go to them and say that you have an injury versus if you don't have access to care, if it's not severe enough that you need emergency care, you may not report it to anybody. You may go about your job. So we looked at the people who were injured. We looked at them by injury. I did look at it by occupation also, but since our sample size was so small, I didn't really find much. So most people were in the unknown or not elsewhere classified by the NAICS codes, but the count, excluding that, the first industry with the most amount of people reporting work-related injuries was the non-military government, and that's the 92 code, excluding 928. So the second was healthcare and social assistance, and then tied for third were construction and accommodation and food service employees. So we looked at the people who were hurt, so we also wanted to look at who paid. So we all know that people don't use, not everyone who's hurt uses workers' comp for a variety of reasons. If anyone has ever dealt with workers' comp, personally, it's a really difficult system. There's a lot of red tape, and it's really hard to navigate through. So a lot of people, especially those who may, English might be their second language, or they might not necessarily have a really good literacy, it's a difficult system, and I personally wouldn't want to go through that. So if it wasn't a serious injury, I might consider not reporting through workers' comp. So as you can see here, less than half of the people surveyed had workers' comp as their payer, and then 20% used out-of-pocket and private insurance, which is a huge percentage. Especially when right now we, in Florida, the best way we have to estimate our population who are sick or get injured on the job is through hospital and ED data using workers' comp as the payer. So if we're looking at this and it's only saying less than 50% are using workers' comp, that's a big difference. So in sum, we thought that adding these questions were successful. I personally am hoping that they're added to the 2018 survey because, like I said, we only did it for 1 year, which was 2013, and we only did it for one quarter in 2013. So it is a really, really small sample in comparison to our overall Florida sample. I think it's a great way to supplement what we know on occupational injuries and illnesses. And this was just a really brief analysis because we hadn't done this before, so we didn't really know what we were looking for. So in the future, I personally would really like to look at self-reported mental health status, asthma, sleep, so the number, how many hours of sleep you get each night, tobacco use, alcohol consumption, and physical activity. Thank you. Questions? Yes.
If I understand correctly, the injury question was asked of people who sought treatment.
Correct, yes. Oh, absolutely. I know that this question is asked by a lot of states, so I think the reason why, and this was before my time, so I have no idea how it got added, how this went about, but a lot of states do ask this question, so I think in order to kind of stay with the states and maybe do a multi-state analysis, so I think in that sense it would be good to keep the same question just so it can be analyzed between and with other states, but I absolutely agree with you, though.
So I'm hoping to meet an effort of about 12 or 13 states this year to ask the same question, and we kind of went around, how do we exactly want to ask this question? I think part of it is it's a state-added question, and it costs money. So states have to pay money to have this added to their bureau, because that sometimes it can be thousands and thousands of dollars,
right?
Because it's actually kind of like different.
Right.
Any state can certainly, start to break it down even further. But number one, it's going to cost more money, and then you still have the small sample size. And can you also sustain the addition of your industry and occupation questions? It becomes kind of complicated. So there's been one publication on a 10-state study. What year it was, but your numbers are like right in the middle, and New Hampshire did it a couple of times and kept getting the same numbers, the 4.8% and 50%.
Really? Okay.
Did not use workers' comp, so it's still very telling what we're learning from these studies, and we will have another 12 or 13 state study to
right.
Do it.
Yeah.
Carla, can you remind us? Does the question, is it the same as Florida asked, or is it the question you're using?
Yeah.
It's pretty much the same. Yeah, I mean, we definitely said that we wanted to make it, that
it requires
bad enough to warrant medical attention.
Yeah, and I don't know how many states do it, but that question, word for word, is used by several other states.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting how you show that people who don't have a primary care provider, that's interesting, because it is if you don't have a primary care provider, you may not do it. I mean, I think one of the original rationale on that was, you know, the OSHA more than first aid reporting.
Right.
I was struck by your, you said a couple times that it was only asked to a quarter of the survey respondents for the year.
Yeah.
So I'm thinking that maybe it was only asked to, and maybe correlating with more information, was it only asked to currently working in an effort to make some data that's somewhat comparable to what the soil would collect?
So it was asked to people who are currently working, so the working, the self-employed, and then those who were who have been employed within the last year. But I'm not, again, it was before my time, so I'm not sure why it was only one quarter of the year.
So you should talk to Aaron about it, but I think we were having issues with bringing the Florida data in.
Okay.
So one thing is for the workers' comp, you want to exclude the self-employed because they're not eligible.
Well, right, yes. Yeah, I thought there was one.
I think it's one other thing that when we ask hospital workers if their injuries were treated by, you know, paid for by workers' comp, we got a really low percentage. And we think that in certain settings where there's an employee health, you know, unit, they're treated by the nurse and they don't get
injured. So a lot of hospitals are self-insured.
Right.
So
well, they're still reportable, and that's
what still reportable.
It, but the worker doesn't experience any interface.
But Melissa had that as a row there. She had it treated by the employer, but not through workers' comp.
That correct. Yeah.
Oh, was that one?
Yeah, that was I think the fourth one.
Oh yeah, I didn't.
John? I think we have that option in the multi-state one.
Do you? Okay.
John?
No, sorry.
Okay. I want to thank all of our speakers. Did a great job. Thank you very much. And we're really happy that people are using the BRFMS data. This is what we're trying to do to get to the state coordinators, showing that there is